This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Brentford FC, come on you Brentford, come on.
This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. And unfortunately, I have to relay the fact we're coming to you from the virtual joint again. A little bit gutting, seeing as like only like literally, was it yesterday or the day before? It was last night we were in the pub, enjoying the match against Watford, seeing the goals, having a few drinks with our friends, totally socially distanced down the globe. Very good night as well it was. It was almost like sort of kind of like the, it's almost like New Year's Eve again. You know what I'm saying? You know, so, and then after that, now we have now tipped into tier three with the rest of the country. So we're going to be podcasting virtually. We're going to be watching games virtually. We're just going to be sitting in our houses and keeping ourselves safe as we go into the Christmas time. Hope everyone's keeping themselves safe out there. I know Bees fans will have a big smile on their face after that match last night, but after the last two matches, because it's gone very, very well. Like I said to you, my name is Billy Grant, and I'm here in the virtual joint, virtually sitting with my buddies over a post-match drink.
I'm very well, thank you. I've cheered up a lot in the past week or so. I've been from going to see the first game at Lionel Road. It was fantastic for me. I really, really enjoyed that. And since then, I think we've been playing all right. And I've been very impressed with the performances, and it's cheered me up.
Good. I'm glad you're happy. You got yourself a bit of Christmas cheer there, Savvy B. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit. We've got the Liberal Nick, West Country Liberal Nick, who is, as far as I'm concerned, you're the only one of us who's actually not in tier three. You're like in tier zero or something ridiculous, you know. You're running around with no clothes on down there. You're so happy, aren't you?
Bill, as the true Liberal, delighted to welcome you to tier two, where I'm really, it's really good to be able to be out and about, still subject to some of the restrictions, but if Brentford want to ground share with Exeter City, that would be really useful, because then we could all come and down to the game. It's a bit of a travel for a lot of fans, but for me, 30 minutes down the road, that'll be fine. But all good, and looking forward to chatting about what has been, as I've said, a couple of really good performances in the last 7 days.
They have been very good performances indeed, which I think is quite interesting, because you know we'll probably talk about Thomas Frank's comments. We'll definitely talk about Thomas Frank. We'll be talking about the games. We'll be talking about the feelings that have been going around, because I know there's been a bit of unhappiness with the way that Brentford have been playing this season. You know, there's been quite a lot of negativity considering where we've started the season. Again, this is not pointing fingers at anybody, because everyone's got their right, you know, to say what they want to about this. And, you know, some people, and I get it to a certain extent, some people might be unhappy that the style of football that we're playing this season hasn't been as pretty as it has been last season.
You know, whether or not that's a good enough excuse to ask for the manager to get sacked, that's a question we have to put out to the, you know, just to put out to people out there. But people have their opinion. If you see what's going on in and around us, I mean, look at West Brom again. You know, if I look at this league in one way, I'm sort of quite happy that we are in this Championship division this season. Only because for the various reasons, you know, that we're playing all these Premier League teams and watching that on the TV. I mean, it's bad enough watching the TV in the Championship. Go on, watching all these Premier League games that we've never been to on the TV. I'll be in tears. I'll be crying. You know what I'm saying? So in a way, I'm quite glad that we haven't gone up to a certain extent. But on the flip side of it, and as I explained on the Watford podcast that I was on, Voice of the Vic podcast, I said I was a little bit gutted that, you know, unfortunately, the team that we've got was broken up last season, and I think it would have been a very good team, and I think they would have competed very well in the Championship. And looking at the team that probably pipped us to the post, West Brom, you know, the reality is, and I'm not saying this in a bitter way, yes, of course they beat us to the post because they've got more points than us, but I think that we were the better team, and they have now just gone and sacked their manager, and they're not looking fully equipped for the Premier League. And in a way, I sort of think, it's a bit of a waste, isn't it? If they go out and then they come back and they set them, and it's just like, it's almost like, what's the point? It's like, you've got this, you know, you've got to at least compete a little bit. And at least I think that we would have gone up there, you know, with that team that we got and competed a little bit. And in a way, I think that was it's a bit, almost like a bit of a wasted spot. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that actually there is a growing gulf in class between the Championship and the Premiership, and it's a bit worrying really, because I think I've said this before, the yo-yoing of clubs. I mean, one of Bournemouth or Norwich or Watford are bound to be automatically promoted this season. My guess is it will probably be Norwich, but you know, they again are one season wonders in the Premier League, because rightly or wrongly the owners make the decision not to spend big in the summer. I mean, that was Fulham's problem 2 years ago. And it's quite clear that West Brom haven't spent any money at all this summer either, relying on the Championship team. And that got them up to get them day. And all it shows is that they will probably be coming down along with Sheffield United. I look at, you know, we rave about Leeds. We thought Leeds were an excellent team in the Championship last season. They can't win for love nor money in the Premiership. I think they've lost the last five, six games in the Premiership so far. You know, has their bubble burst? I don't think they'll go down, because I think Sheffield Wednesday and West Brom are down. But it'll be interesting to see. And no, but what worries me is the gulf in class. And, you know, yes, we've signed some great players in the break, but, you know, will they be good enough to keep us up should we get to the promised land? Not the promised land. I hate using that phrase. Should get us to the Premiership at the end of this season. We probably will need to spend a bit more money. And is that money there? That's the other question.
I kind of agree with some of that, but I don't think it's about how much you spend, because Fulham showed, as you said, a couple of seasons ago, that they spent the whole amount and fluffed it. I think it's about how you spend it. And I think you need to grow in the Premiership. Some teams are good at getting there and staying there. Some teams come back down. They go up, like Burnley a few seasons ago, they went up, didn't spend any money, came down, were so strong the following season. They went up and they built and built and built, and they've stayed there for a good few seasons now. And I think, but it's always a time that you're going to go. You know, like last season, as you say, Norwich, Bournemouth and Watford all came down, and they all went up in 2015, didn't they? So it's quite interesting how the yo-yo clubs keep doing it. And it's, I think it's not just three yo-yo clubs, obviously. There's about eight of them, and they will be the ones that tend to go up and down, and occasionally someone will stay up and make it work.
You talked about Leeds United, and I think to a certain extent you have to remember as well, when you go up, when you go down, it's about adaptation. So for Leeds United, you know, they have to adapt to a new league, their players have to adapt to a new league, their managers to adapt to a new league. You know, there may be an argument that Bielsa is just like, I'm Bielsa and this is what I do, and he's gone up there and he's doing what he does, and teams learn how to pick them off. and how to beat them. Teams up there with better players, with managers, with tactical nous. And maybe Bielsa is actually having a massive learning curve, and maybe if they stay up, they'll be different next season. Very similar to when teams come down to the Championship. Again, I was listening to the Watford podcast, I think it was Voices from the Vic, and they were chatting away saying, God, I didn't realise how gruesome this league is, how difficult it is, how physical it is, how full on it is. And for them, it's a learning curve for them to come down, and if they can't adapt to it, they're going to struggle, even though it's an inverted commas a lower division. So I think it's down to, yes, Sav's completely right about how you spend your money, not how much you spend your money, but also how you adapt with the conditions and go with it. And yes, I think you are right. Sometimes I think you probably might have to try and see if you can survive first year and then see if you can build from there. But, you know, you see teams like Wolverhampton Wanderers. You know, they've done all right out of it. To be fair, they had quite a lot of money when they were in the Championship, and they spent it right. People said they spent it right when they got to the Premier League. No, Leeds, you know, seem to be doing it. Burnley, as you said, have done all right. Brighton, you know, there or thereabouts. But, you know, I don't think you can. Don't forget, we are Brentford. And if we're going to use this sweeping statement on all teams, then everyone would use a sweeping statement on how, say, Championship clubs just spend loads of money to get out of the league, and we're different to them. So I would like to think if we went up to the Premier League, you know, whenever that may be, we would actually be different in the way that we'd approach actually being in the Premier League. So I don't think it's right actually just using a sweeping statement about how all teams struggle and there's a massive gulf, so it's just going to be the same for anyone.
Well, I mean, the absolute key is recruitment, isn't it? And I mean, we have what is acknowledged as one of the best recruiting teams around. And I don't think that would change whether we're recruiting players for the Championship or whether we're recruiting players for the Premier League. I mean, I heard an interesting piece on the piece on the radio. I think it must have been Five Live on Sunday, talking about Sheffield United. And Bill, you might be able to confirm this, but they said that Sheffield United were interested in Ollie Watkins, but Wilder was not given the money by the board to go after Ollie and sign him up. Now, it may be that Ollie and his advisors saw that actually going to Sheffield United was not the right place for him. But equally, is it the case that Sheffield United were not prepared to spend £30 million on a striker that could quite easily be banging goals for them and might be at least making sure that they're out of the relegation zone and not guaranteed to be relegated this summer? Did you hear any whispers about Ollie going to Sheffield United?
I haven't heard this season. I mean, I've been a little bit out of the loop. I haven't sort of sniffed around so much on that. I know the season before there were rumours of him possibly going to them, but he decided to stand firm and stay with us. Which is a good thing, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, and the reason, part of the reason as well, I think that last season they didn't want to pay the money. So I think that, you know, I think that they might have been kind of sniffing in and around, you know, 12 million or something like that. Again, I'm, don't quote me on this, but I think they're talking about that, whereas opposed to we were looking at, I don't know, is it 15, 18 million? But they didn't want to pay that type of money because at the time they didn't think it's worth it. I think what's happened is obviously he's gone on, scored loads of goals the following season. Maybe Wilder's gone, oh, look, I told you we should have got him, right? He's 30 million now, let's go for him. And the old bosses have gone, oh, 30 million, that's just far too much. And it's kind of one of those ones where you make the wrong decision, you end up continually chasing your tail. And I think, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, with players like that, you know, unless you're Man City or one of these teams that just, you know, there's some teams that will wait till the end till it's completely proven. They'll just come out with a wheelbarrow and throw the money in. And there's other teams where they've got to get in early, because when the price has gone up and up, you know, you can't really get in there. With Ivan Toney, say for example, if they wanted Ivan Toney, you know, any of those Premier League teams, if they, you know, they're all saying, oh, we're looking at Ivan Toney. If they'd gone in and they bid 8 million for him from Peterborough, they would have got him, right? And that would have been a bargain for them. 100%. Brentford wouldn't have got him. They would have got him. 8 million. He's gone to the Premier League. Bob's your uncle. Now they're all talking about him. But the fact is that if Ollie Watkins has gone for 30 million, how much is Ivan Toney? You know what I'm saying? So they're going to have to pay at least that money now. So, you know, if they're not on that level, if Sheffield United are going, oh, Ivan Toney, you know, we should have gone for him. Well, it's like, well, you know, you could have gone last season, but you didn't go there. So they've got to be on the money. And if they're not on the money, they could talk as much as they want to, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah, sounds like Chris Wilder getting his excuses in early before he gets sacked.
That's right. But anyway, listen, let's forget about the Premier League for now, because we don't want to be looking too far ahead. we've got to look at what's happening with us now. And what is happening with us now is that things have started to warm up a little bit for Brentford as they got a few couple of good results under the bag this week. We played Nottingham Forest on Saturday and we also played Watford on Wednesday. Or it's Tuesday night actually, because it's Wednesday now. And it was a very good set of results that we had. But not only that, we actually played some very nice football. We're going to just step away for a little bit and come back and talk about those two games straight after this little guitar twang. So, we got 4 points. We should have got 6 points, really. Well, you know, listen, I'm just getting a bit greedy there. Now, I would have loved 6 points. And, you know, if the game was over in the first half against Watford, you know, I think we would have very much said, God, how do we not get 6 points out of those two games? But things did change in the second half against Watford. But talking about the Forest match, first of all, before the Forest game, we went into that game and a little bit worried. You know, a couple of the results didn't quite go our way. Derby County was a bit of a stinker. You know, fans in the stadium, great for the fans, and I'm really glad that they all had a good time in the stadium. But what was on offer for them wasn't particularly great. The fare was a little bit stinky, you know, and I think they had to sort of put it into the bin, you know, and pretend that they didn't want seconds for that one. But and before that, Blackburn Rovers, you know, went, you know, down to 10 men. And there's an argument to say that we should have put them to bed. And we didn't quite put them to bed. They didn't have very many chances. But the two chances that they got, which are not very high chances, they actually scored. And disappointingly, we got a point out of that game. Even though Blackburn Rovers are a half-decent side. But coming into this Forest game, who were appalling. Their record before this game was appalling. I mean, I talked to a lot of Forest fans, as you know, like Mr. Dorr, you know, Greg, the Forza Garibaldi lot and everything like that. And all of them, they're on a proper downer. They just said that we are awful at the moment now. And they're keeping their fingers crossed that Houghton will be able to turn things around. But they're saying they are stinky. And they went into that game and that first half, an hour, they were terrible, weren't they, Sev?
That was really, really bad. They were absolutely awful. But we were also very good, I think. I don't know if it was we got the confidence from them being poor, or whether it was the other way around, that we just went out with a lot of confidence and we just knew we could take them. But the fact that they just let Jan Elt just run the show, first half hour, there wasn't a player on him. He was just in the middle of the park, spraying passes all over the place, just completely controlled the game on his own. It was just amazing, you know. And I think it took him a good while. I mean, Chris Hughton's an experienced manager, but it took him ages to actually work out what to do. Just stick a man near him. That's all he had to do. And it, eventually it did change the you know, the way the game was played a little later. But by then, I think we just had such control. And yeah, I just thought we were pretty magnificent that first half hour. And yeah, okay, they got back into it. But we were still in total control, I thought. There was never a time that I thought we were going to lose that game.
Were you not a little bit concerned? Because, listen, if we had so much domination that first half without necessarily... But we didn't actually score. And then Forest, because we didn't score, they got their tails up and they started to come back into the game. Weren't you a little bit concerned, you know, considering what had happened the past few games as well, that, you know, that we were, I'll say, losing our scoring touch, but we didn't actually get ahead in a game where we really should have?
I felt we were making plenty of chances and I felt that we were on top of them. I mean, there were a few scary moments, you know, but we know there's quality in that side, and especially in the second half when Knockout was able to start running at us. But I felt quite confident. You know, you never know if a goal is going to come. But as long as you're making the chances, that's what matters. And I felt we were making the chances throughout that. And it just felt to me that we were on top. Just felt, you know, a gut feeling that we had control of that game.
The plus side of that, although there was a lot of plus sides for that, but was our defence. As we know this season, Thomas Frank has been really concentrating on defence. Some people might say that we're a little bit more boring this season because we haven't got the flair that we do, but he's trying to get us tight, because the answer is that if we don't let in any goals, we're not going to lose a game. You know, we lost a lot of games 1-0. I think we lost about a quarter of our games 1-0 last season, so he's trying to stop doing that. Interestingly, and JB will talk about it later, about how far ahead we are this season compared to last season. If you look at the stats that he throws into the pot, you'll see what the difference will be. It will be quite interesting. But like I said to you, the defence is the key. And Mads Beck Sorensen, who had a couple of question marks around him again this season because people weren't quite sure, you know, they weren't sure how agile he was, they weren't sure about his passing ability. However, he has shown the world and Brentford fans and everybody that he's actually quite a good defender, isn't he, Liberal?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I mean, the only disappointment about Saturday's result was that we didn't keep a clean sheet, because that would have been apparently the first time ever in our history that we'd kept five successive away clean sheets. And we didn't quite manage to break the record on Saturday, but hey-ho, we won, so who cares? Records are there to be broken. Madsbeck has really grown up this season, and you can see the defensive work that Thomas Frank has put into this team. It's become apparent that... And I was reflecting actually on after the Derby result, and the Derby game was awful. It really was dreadful. And I had to sort of go back and watch the highlights, which took about 30 seconds. I'm surprised I managed to find 30 seconds worth of highlights to do to remind myself how poor it was. But actually, are Brentford becoming a functional football team in respect that when it's necessary, we grind out a result that includes a draw? And when we're on form and when things click and go together, we turn in performances, a bit like you saw in the first half against Forest and the first half last night against Watford. And that's what you need to be a automatically promoted team. So full credit to Thomas Frank, because he really has got that defence signed, sealed and delivering. Madbeck Sorensen has grown. I think all of us who've been watching were a bit doubtful about him at the start. He did make some mistakes. I would suggest to you that probably Charlie Goode is at the same stage of his development as Madbeck was beginning of last season. Time at Northampton probably will have helped him in the same way that Madbeck was helped by his time at Wimbledon. And that defence, I don't have any qualms that when Pontus disappears, if we miss, we'll go on to discuss Ethan. But if Ethan is out for a game or two, you know, we have more than adequate replacements. So full credit to the team and the coaching that's taken place.
I think the jury's still out on Good. I mean, I've not seen enough good from Good to actually still say, no, we can rely on him.
But Sam, I think if you look back, Sam, look back a year, and I think you could have said the same about MBS.
Yeah, but then it needs a year for Good to come good. I mean, I'm not writing him off. I'm just saying I haven't seen enough of him of late to say that he's you know, solid and he's as good as Madsbeck, because I think Madsbeck has been excellent. And you know, he's not Ethan Pinnock, he's not Pontus Janssen, but he's stepped in and done some really great stuff.
To coin a phrase, and using quite a topical phrase at the moment now, obviously we bought Good from Northampton and they won the playoffs last season, so you thought, great, this guy is, we're going to just plug him in. But unfortunately, it looks like Good is not oven ready, so we're going to have to put it back in the oven for a little bit and see if we can renegotiate that one for a little bit of time, and fingers crossed in the new year things might come out all well and good. But anyway, so let's go to the pub on Saturday and Tuesday and listen to the fans to hear what they had to say straight after the game.
Yeah, I thought today was pretty decent, Bill. A lot of the games have been quite dull recently, and I really enjoyed that. I thought we created a lot of chances, spread the goals out, and lovely to see Knockhart sent off at the end. Fulham, exactly. Putney. Very, very happy with that. All in all, you know, much more entertaining than both the Blackburn and the Derby game.
We never make it easy for ourselves, do we? But yeah, they're bottom of the league, aren't they? So always going into a game, we think we're going to do better than we are. But like against Derby the other night, that's always tough. So even when you're playing bottom of the league, doesn't mean you're necessarily going to win. So we always have to go out there and give 110%, to be honest.
Frankly, if Ben Rahm was still here, I think we'd be top of the league by now. But, you know, we know the situation there. I think we're in a really good spot. It's amazing that there's been any negativity around us for me, because I think 11 unbeaten, 6th in the league, and there's a lot of players that still haven't hit form yet that will. I'm convinced that Mwemo's going to hit form. I'm convinced that Kalos has got another gear to go in. I think it's happy days, mate. Loving it today.
We play some really good football. We look positive. We look strong. Force us run. Great ball in. I mean, great ball, great goal. So I think, you know, it was good, you know, good to be still unbeaten. We're looking stronger, a lot better than Tuesday's performance. And we can build from that as well. We can absolutely build from that.
It was just so nice to be three goals up. We looked pretty decent the first part of the first half, 1-0 up. Looked like we controlled the game like we did at Barnsley, for instance, that kind of thing. Let Forrest back into it. The offside, he was just about interfering. It's like, might have been let off, but we got a bit lucky with that, and to come away and score two extra goals, very pleasing. But we got to do better than that against better sides, let's face it.
I've got a mixed feelings about it, because, you know, the first half we were so much better than them, possession, chances, and if it was 2-0 at half time, I don't think it would have been unfair. Maybe even 3-0, to be honest. Second half, they changed the shape, they pressed a bit higher, and it became a bit more of a... actually, it was a really exciting game, end-to-end. Both teams wanted the win, and it made it a really good watch. Obviously, then Sorensen gets sent off. Sorry, I mean,
how can you mix them up?
Bloody identical, aren't they? It's not my problem. I've always felt like twins. Mads Beck Pinnock gets sent off. Listen, it was a penalty for me. And again, in previous years, it's a red card, so a bit annoying. And once it goes 1-0, you think you take a draw all day long and get that goal, and you leave quite happy. But a really good game of football. We've stood up really well against one of the top sides.
But if honest, first half we were strong. We looked really, really strong in that first half, and I don't think Watford knew what to do with us. You know, I think we were just really strong. Second half, you know, ref changed that game. He really did. I mean, and just going back to the first half, that should have been we should have had a free kick for the foul on Tony. But in the second half, they came out a little bit more on fire, but we still looked really strong. It was never on this earth a penalty. Well, it's like, you could say it was a penalty, but it was never a sending off. It was never a straight red card. You know, and I hope that they would send out and we've got Pinnock. But you could see that, you know, it was never, ever going to be a straight red card. And that changed the whole. That changed the whole kind of form of the game, really.
No, I think it was pretty good. I'm always excited when we play the better teams, because I think it does bring us a little bit out of ourselves. I think in the last run, whilst we've been unbeaten in all these so many games, we haven't maybe put in the great performances. Coming up against a better team, we seem to be putting in a better performance, and I was really impressed today, particularly after we lost the man.
There were some really good performances all over the pitch. Look, when we went the man down, obviously I'd have taken the draw. In the first half, I honestly thought we were going to win. I always said it was going to be a tight game, and it proved that. Watford proved themselves to be quite a sort of functional side, playing a lot of kind of long balls and crossfield passes, and, you know, we outplayed them actually in the first half when there was parity and 11v11. So I'm proud of the beast tonight, and I think we can build upon it now with a grueling schedule for the rest of December.
Just one other positive point I want to say about this before we go over and just look at this game a little bit more. We've been a bit worried. It's been all about Ivan Toney, you know, as we say it, Besotted, you know, 46 goals he's going to score this season. He has scored 10 and 10, 11 and 11. And I think it's about, 14 and 17 or something like that, or 15 and 17. I'll have to have a look. I don't know. He's scoring so many goals and the games are just coming so thick and fast. I've got no idea what's going on. But, you know, it's all about Toney. And we were saying that we need to spread the goals around a little bit. But this game, Dalsgaard with a goal, De Silva with a goal, and Toney with a goal. That is good news, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, keep spreading the goals around. I do think that, I mean, Toney, of course, is our penalty taker. That helps boast anybody's goal average.
You've got to score him.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I think the real difficulty is that Mbeumo is not functioning properly at the moment. I think it's something we ought to discuss and not draw a veil over. I don't know what you do. He is a class player. He's got, you know, no doubt he's got the ability. He's probably very low on confidence. I can't remember Saturday, to be honest. Last night, for instance, though, he took a shot, which was, you know, he should have passed it, but he took a shot. You can see he's desperate to try and score a goal. But It's one of those classic coaching management dilemmas, isn't it? Do you leave somebody like Mbeumo in the team, knowing that he will eventually get a goal and that will restore his confidence? Or do you take him out of the team? I don't know, can he play for our, you know, B team and rack up a hatful of goals against Rangers reserves or something, which would then get him his confidence back into scoring? Because of our strike force, yeah, force is there, force will score, but he's young, he will blow hot and cold, you know. Of our main attacking strike force, if something happens to Tony, I'm a bit worried that, you know, the rest of the team can step up playing with bits and pieces, parts and goals, but will actually... What's the answer about Mbeumo? Somebody tell me.
I mean, for me, Mbeumo is actually playing a lot better in the past couple of games. I think he's coming back into his... into form. Yes, you're right about him shooting. I think, you know, he's still a bit, you know, worried about that. I think he's still playing on his mind. But I mean, regarding, you know, if we lose Tony, I think we've got our natural replacement in Forks. I think having Tony and Forks together isn't the way forward, certainly not at the moment. And Canos has been absolutely superb in the past couple of games. So I think the reason we're getting these better performances is that these players, Mbeumo, Canos, are starting to play really well. And you see that coming in our performances further up the field, and you see more chances being created and therefore more players other than Tony scoring.
Okay, so listen, we've been chatting about this game, but what we're going to do is we're going to go over to Will, the spreadsheet winker, who's going to be giving us the stats on both the Forest and the Watford game. Will, let us know what's going down.
Spreadsheet winker,
he's a winker, and it does seem good like it pretty well should.
Spreadsheet winker,
he's a winker, and he's always putting his toes.
Today we're going to give a rundown of the Nottingham Forest and Watford games. First of all, away to Forest on Saturday. It finished 3-1 to the Bees. In terms of XG, Brentford made 1.02 and Forest made 0.63. This was another dominant defensive performance from the Bees, and is the second game running where we conceded 0 XG in the first 30 minutes. We could have been ahead after just 7 minutes, Ivan Toney threw one-on-one with the keeper, shooting wide of the net and proving that he is human after all. This had 0.33 XG, and it would have been a much higher chance had his position been more central. Then came Henrik Dalsgaard's flicked header from a Jensen corner in the 14th minute. This was just a 4% chance, despite being close to the 6-yard box, because headers, especially from corners, are notoriously the most difficult shots to score. The randomness of a round ball coming off a round head means that these are scored less often than you'd think, and Henrik did excellently to guide it into the net. Then came a period of perceived dominance from Forest, between the 30th minute and the 86th, where they had 54% possession and made 10 shots compared to Bees 3. Knockout seemed to be dangerous, but Forest never really threatened, creating nothing above 10% XG. The only let-off for the Bees was the offside flag denying Knockout from about 15 yards out. This would have been a reasonably high XG chance because he was central and there were no defenders between him and Reyes near post. Then everything changed because of Josh De Silva's left boot, cutting inside and caressing the ball into the top corner like we saw him do 6 times last season. It was a 7% chance from right on the edge of the area. He did brilliantly to draw his marker wide and create the space he needed to make the shot, something we've been missing without a certain Algerian winger this season. Next came Ivan Toney displaying his incredible physicality to carve out a huge 31% XG chance on 88 minutes. He beat the offside trap and took advantage of an indecisive Bryce Samba to poke home from 18 yards. This was a predator's goal, the mark of a striker who will chase a difficult ball when already 2-0 up. Joe Worrell then scored a late consolation for the hosts, heading home well from a knock-out free kick with just a 4% chance. All in all, very good win for the Bees. We scored 3 good goals and were dominant defensively, and we created plenty of high XG chances. Now let's move on to the Watford game from Tuesday night. It finished 1-1. In terms of XG, Bees made 1.84, whereas Watford made 1.75. This was a game of two halves. In the first half, despite not scoring, Bees looked completely dominant in defence and attack. We had one huge chance to go ahead, Ivan Toney just failing to slot home a difficult comeback from Josh De Silva inside the 6-yard box. It was a 54% XG chance. The big man also rattled the crossbar with a 20-yard screamer, which completely beat Ben Foster in the Watford net. Conversely, Watford made no chances above 10% XG in the first half and were limited to only one shot in the Brentford box. We had 65% possession in the first half, and this gave our defence and midfield ample opportunity to build up play. Josh De Silva was playing further up the pitch than he has done recently, with 69% of his passes in the Watford half. Jan Alt made 46 passes in the middle of the park, of which a huge 40 were accurate. And many of his passes were forwards and out towards De Silva and Jensen, suggesting he's getting better at playing Norgaard-style progressive passes. He also won 5 aerials, breaking up Watford's long balls into midfield. The second half was a tale of two penalties, with Ethan Pinnock seeing red for his challenge on Ismaïla Sarr. Rightly or wrongly, the referee awarded a penalty which Troy Deeney drilled down the middle of the goal. Raya wouldn't have stopped it even if it had been made of concrete. Moments later, Bees had a penalty from a blatant, quite frankly insane handball from Watford defender Cabaselli. Ivan dispatched it in his trademark step-step bottom corner style. Both penalties were automatically 77% XG chances. So Bees were a man down in attack, having brought on Charlie Goud at centre-back. Unsurprisingly, Brentford didn't create any big chances after this moment, though we did have 3 shots in the Watford box, all below 10% XG. Watford made their 2 biggest non-penalty chances on 72 and 86 minutes, firstly from Sarr in a 22% chance, and secondly from Tom Cleverley, who flashed across goal in a 28% chance. I think the Bees' defence should be proud of only allowing these 2 high XG opportunities, despite being a man down. We did allow more shots in the box than before, but apart from these 2, there were much smaller chances below 0.1 XG. This, of course, doesn't include the marginal offside decision, which went against the Hornets late on. A cross from Sarr was deflected unluckily off Rico Henry, and resulted in a free header at the near post, which would have been a high XG opportunity, and was scored on the night. So I'm pretty happy with a point from this one, given our red card. I thought it was a resolute defensive performance, and we were absolutely dominant in the first half.
So there you have it, Will Allsop, the spreadsheet winker, as we say. Nottingham Forest fans, thank you very much for giving us a lovely little feature for us. You took the piss out of us last season and called us spreadsheet winkers, and we just thought, let's slot it into the show and just do it every week so we could be reminded what fun you made of us. But anyway,
XG, the way forward. XG is the way forward. Yeah,
it's not the FA forward. It's just part of football, and it makes you see things in different ways, as we say. And I think it's quite good, and it's interesting. You know, you liberal, you know, soothsayer liberal. You know, is we can see you sort of WhatsApping every now and then. Oh, did you know that what's XG is like? You know, it's just like thinking, oh, okay, there you go. Listen, it's not for
everybody. Hang on, Bill. If you ever see me quote an accurate stat or go on about XG,
I know you've been drinking.
You know, I've been smoking something really strange. Yeah.
That's right. But listen, as you said, you know, as you can see, defence really tight for the Forest game, like, you know, and Forest created very little decent chances, you know, nothing over sort of 10%. So basically, kind of like any shot they had, you know, only 1 in 10 or less would have actually gone in the back of the net, which is a good position to be in. To be fair, doesn't mean that you can't score. Like, you know, you saw the goals that we scored there. Dalsgaard, like I said to you, brilliant header that was. That really clever little header. You know, 400 of those will go hit the back of the net. Josh De Silva, typical Josh De Silva that was as well. You could see him as he came in, and you could see he was going to go, and he managed to get the ball on that foot, and he curved that in. We thought, yes, Josh, but only 7 out of 100 of those shots actually hit the back of the net as well. So, listen, they don't have to be all high-class chances. You just have to have decent players that put them in the back of the net. But as we've seen as of late, a lot of those chances that we've been having have been getting over. They'd be going wide. They'd be going all over the place. So it's nice to see them come in and all in one game. But in general, like I said to you, Will, he, I felt good after that game. And again, I think what these things is that, you know, as a fan, you sit down there, you watch it in the boozer, you think, oh, that was really good. Brentford actually played really well. They came out of that sticky patch and then they went on forward and they scored 3 goals. So you feel good as a fan when you see it. Then when you see it backed up with what's actually going on the pitch to show them how little the chances that they created and maybe how they sort of cut them out in certain areas and how they've actually sort of progressed, it makes you actually feel even better, because you think, listen, if they're going to continue to do that and they're coming out of that sticky patch, that only bodes well for the new year, doesn't it?
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. Yeah, no, because I think, you know, consistency is the key. key. And if we can keep turning in consistent performances at the back to contain consistent performances in midfield. I mean, what will be really interesting as well is, do we know how long Norgaard is out for?
Brentford never tell you, you know, they're not going to say he's coming back next week. That's just not what they do. You know, he'll turn up on a bench one time, he'll go, hey, you know, so it's one of those things. But listen, we've got his replacement is doing all right at the moment now. So, you know, let's be thankful for small mercies that Jan Elt is doing the business.
Yeah, well, you took away my point, because I'd be interested, you know, interesting discussion is actually how do you accommodate Norgaard and Jan Elt together in the same team? Can they all play together? I don't think they can. So that's great.
Let's cross that bridge when it comes.
Well, yeah, my point is, given what the championship season is like, given we've still got cup fixtures to come up, League Cup, FA Cup starts again in January, you know... By gum, we've got an embarrassment of riches, haven't we? And, you know, what are we going to do with all of these, I wonder?
We do. Listen, moving on, Watford game. You know, listen, that first half performance was tremendous. And I say it was tremendous because we haven't seen us play like that for, at all this season. And I think we were getting a bit worried that we'd forgotten how to play football like that, losing Syed Benrahma and Ollie Watkins. But I think it goes to show you it does take a bit of time and probably having the right combination of players on the pitch. They look fast, they look up for it. And maybe also it did help that Watford were... Well, saying that, they're saying Watford were, you know, Watford are a good side and Watford play half-decent football. But Watford are also quite direct. You know, they like to get the ball up there quick, up to their fast men up front, so they weren't necessarily the 100% splaying the ball around like a Swansea would do, or like, you know, what other teams would do in our league. So, you know, I'm not taking it away from Watford, but that was a performance to make you warm in your tummy, wouldn't it, Sev?
Well, the first half performance I thought was superb.
Sorry, first half performance.
First half was absolutely magnificent. That was our old Brentford back, and I think it's partly because the Canos had a superb game. He was absolutely brilliant. And I think we all started to click, and there was just a kind of belief, probably from, you know, the Saturday game as well. But we've also got this thing where we do tend to play very well against good teams. And I don't know if that's, you know, just because they play in a particular way and we you know, that suits us. But it worked really well, and I thought we were absolutely brilliant. And I think what we were missing earlier in the season was Benrahma and Benrahma's tricks. But when you saw Canos last night, he was just doing some fantastic stuff, really, just picking the ball up and making it work. And there was some beautiful stuff. You know, it wasn't the little flicks and tricks, but it was probably, you know, sort of even more effective than a lot of Benrahma's stuff. So I was really impressed. But the whole thing was clicking. I think apart from Jansen in the back, instead of Mads Beck, that's our best available team at the moment, without Norgaard anyway. I mean, when they showed just that team lineup, I thought, this is it. This is what we're going to give it a go.
I dare say it as well. You know, we battered them nil all in the first half, and okay, the beginning of the second half, they did come back into the game to a certain extent, but we still battered them. If you look at the XG, we just absolutely smashed them, you know, to pieces, you know.
Didn't score any goals, though.
But we didn't score any goals. However, the game was turned, and it's one of those ones where it's really typical. I mean, we hit the post. We had another chance that should have gone in, and, you know, they didn't take those chances where, I'll not be funny, they were absolutely gilt-edged chances, and then they got that penalty and we got a player sent off, and that changed the game, didn't it?
It was a frantic 5 minutes, wasn't it, in that second half? I agreed totally with Sav. First half I thought was the best half of football I've seen for a while, actually, in Brentford. My memory's awful, so I can't recall last season's games that clearly, but yeah, it was good. So frantic five minutes, you know, Ethan Pinnock sent off for a tackle that I think actually was a penalty, and looking at it again this morning, probably was deserving of a red card, because under the new rules he didn't actually stop, he didn't actually attempt to make a tackle, so double jeopardy doesn't apply, and Pinnock should have walked. And then we got the
hold on a second, Liberal, sorry to stop you there, because I just want to just pick up this point here. I think it's a bit strange because I do understand that in the rules. So in effect, what they're saying is that, because to me, he went in there and they kind of clashed, and then the guy tripped over. You know, I didn't think Pinnock sort of took him out. They sort of kind of came together, clashed, he fell over. So if Pinnock had gone in, absolutely scythed him, like, you know, and took his knees out, right, and he'd fallen over and got a penalty, he wouldn't have got sent off. But he gets sent off for what he's done there.
Right. He needs to make a positive attempt at the ball. So you might scythe him down, but as long as you've tried to get the ball and perhaps even got it, it wouldn't be.
So we'll move on from that. But it definitely changed the game anyway, because they got a penalty. But ironically, it changed the game in a strange way. I won't say for the better for us, but we had to do two things. We had to kind of firm up and make sure we went more defensive, not to give any chances away. But also, we actually were a bit potty, and we got a penalty back within a few minutes, and we were back in the game, weren't we?
Yeah, I mean, that was that was Stonewall penalty. Wasn't any doubt about it. I mean, what the defender was doing, jumping in that way, it must drive his Serbian manager absolutely mad, needs a good talking to, that defender, for what he did. Ivan Toney, I mean, again, if you watch Ivan Toney's penalty taking technique, it's fascinating to watch. He never looks at the ball when he runs up. He's looking at the keeper all the time. His eyes are totally focused on the keeper. And in the split second between Ivan Toney hitting the ball and the keeper moving, Toney will send it in. Keeper dives to the left, Toney will send it to the right, or vice versa. I mean, absolutely fascinating penalty technique. You know, just wanders up to the ball slowly. I get nervous every time I see him take a penalty. But then you drill down into actually his technique, and it is superb. It really is fantastic the way he takes it, and no doubt he'll keep on scoring.
The Watford manager, as you talked about him, Illich, he wasn't happy at all. I know that, you know, one of you was listening to his post-match interview, and he was really unhappy with the fact that they basically didn't put us to bed, and, you know, it just shows what a good job we did, didn't it?
Yeah, he was absolutely livid. He was saying that, you know, when another team's down to 10 men, I expect my players to go down the wings and get crosses in, but instead we were just lumping it from the back straight up, and, you know, their centre forwards were just able to get rid of it. So I think he was right. I was quite surprised that they weren't a lot more dangerous once we got down to 10 men. So maybe he's got a point. Maybe he's a decent manager after all. But he was quite honest, I felt. He wasn't dissing us or anything like that by saying that they should have won, because in reality, when they're 1-0 up and down to 10 men, they should have won.
And credit to Thomas Frank for sending on Force as well. I mean, you know, Frank wasn't going to just sit back and ensure that a 1-1 result. He actually went for it. And, you know, we could easily have won that game. We had, I think, a couple of chances, didn't we, after Force came on, which, you know, on a better day would have seen us walk away 2-1 winners. But you've got to say to the manager, really refreshing to see a manager not decide to just shut up shop on 10 men, but actually go out and try and win the game. Really, really good stuff from Thomas Frank there.
And Thomas Frank, he got a little bit lively in that match as well, didn't he? I mean, it looked like he got a yellow card, and it looks like he could have got a red card. He was very, very angry with the referee. He had to hold his words after the match when he was talking about the referee and the sending off in certain situations. And it's fair to say that, and we know this because he's a friend of the pod, and we've been down the pub with him, had a drink with him. He is definitely a very passionate manager, and I can't understand, again, listen, each to their own, but people slagging him off and just thinking that he needs to go. Listen, you know, be careful what you wish for is what I say. Listen, look, you know, certain clubs out there, look what they're spiralling downwards when they've done the similar type thing, isn't it?
So yeah, now what I did like is that he actually went over to the to Ivic at the end of the game and apologised, and he said in his post-match thing that, you know, he apologised because he got too passionate and he shouldn't have done, and he also went to the assistant refs and the referee at the end of the game and apologised and did a fist bump with them, and I think that's good. That's a sign of somebody who's passionate but also sensible.
Manners, as we say.
I was just reflecting that I used to complain about Dean Smith not being passionate enough on the touchline. Now we're there, and you know, got a really passionate manager. Really good to see. Really good.
really good to see. Just quickly as well, Sergi Gagnos. He complained about people, just commentators, calling the wrong name, Gagnos. And were you pleased to see that actually they seem to have got it right in this game?
It's Canos. The accent's on the O. There isn't one of those funny little squiggly things on the N. It's Canos.
No, at all. Listen, people are just making up Nougat and Gagnos and, you know, Hoothorns and all this nonsense. But get all that. Like, anyway, listen, JB's going to give us a bit of funk and some stats and some facts. So we're going to go over and listen to what JB is going to tell us this time with some unusual stats and facts.
Hi, Jonathan Birchall here again. The win against Forest was our 8th of the season in the 18th game, exactly the same as last year. However, this year, we're 4 points better off as we've had 7 draws as opposed to only 3. We've also scored 5 more goals, with 27 compared to 22. And this season, we're sharing the goals around a bit more. We've now had 8 different players score, whereas last year it was just 5, when it was a BMW plus Camo and De Silva. Match 19 last year was a game against Luton. The 7-0 was equally the highest Griffin Park scoreline with a clean sheet since the 9-0 against Wrexham in 1963. Although Griffin Park did in fact see a 10-0 win back in 1914 in the Southern League second division. With World War I already underway, football tried to carry on with business as usual. Abertillery were the unfortunate visitors to concede the 10. However, the result only lasted a few weeks in the record books before they withdrew from the league and all their results were expunged. Back to Forest, and it was no surprise we had a goal-scoring substitute. Josh De Silva became the 7th we've had against them, the most against any of this season's championship sides. The other 6 goals on the bench have come from Philip Hoffman, Lasse Vibe, Neil Morpie, and with 3 goals, Sergi Canos.
Jonathan Birchall there with his stats and facts and funk. Sav, you like a bit of funk, don't you?
I've always liked a bit of funk. I've particularly funking for Jamaica, one of my favourite funks.
Well, I don't think that he's going to be funking for Jamaica or any other country at this moment in time, Sav, because we're in tier 3, like you're saying. You'll be funking for your front room, I think, like, you know. But anyway, Jonathan Birchall. Like I said to you, he throws in little interesting ones. He just, like, you know, like, he's like a fisherman, like, you know, just throws them in there and the fish come nibbling. You think, oh, that's quite nice. But the main point that I took off that one as well, or one interesting one that I took off that one again, and we've talked about this, you know, for a few weeks in a row, because like I said to you, people have been moaning about this. Some people have been moaning about our style of football. They'll be saying, you know, our Brentford are rubbish. But the fact is that we are at this point in the season, as he said, 4 points better off than the same point last season. And the main difference is the draws. We're drawing more goals. We're drawing more games than we were last season. Are we scoring more goals as well? We scored 5 more goals than last season. We've got more goal scorers than last season. We've got 8 compared to 5 last year. So in effect, everything is actually a lot better. It might not be as pretty, but it's a lot better. And like I said to you, the 1-0 games that we were losing, we're stopping to do that now. Now, if you were a CEO at a bank or a company, and you gave your boss, your lead manager, a set of, you know, tasks, you say, right, this is what our objectives are for this year. The objectives are, you know, we're going to lower this, we're going to hire this, we're going to make sure that all our shops take more. And you set them the objectives, and if that person gets there, then at the end of the day, you think, listen, you know, you've done all right. Of course, it's got to be done within the ethos of the company. You know, you can't be going out and doing all sorts of naughty business to get there. But as long as you do it within the ethos of the company, then you're all good. Thomas Frank, he's looked at last season, obviously, and he's thought, listen, we got out-tucked in that playoff final against the F word. I can't even say their name. We've been playing football all season, brilliant football, and all of a sudden they've gone out, they've kept it tight, they've really pressed us, and they've just nicked a goal at the last minute. We should be doing that. So he's set the objective this season to get ourselves tighter, get ourselves playing a particular type of football, maybe not be so pretty, but we're not going out there and probably giving the ball away in midfield as we probably used to be doing, because you're actually sort of taking a little more risks and stuff. So it's almost like we're squeezing out the results. And for me, I mean, I can't be going through the, you know, another one of those playoff final losses. So, you know, we're getting the wins out of this. And for me, it's a good thing.
Yeah, I think for me, I think Thomas Frank's learned each year, hasn't he? Because the first year we were just letting in tons of goals. So last year he said, OK, we're going to stop letting in tons of goals. And he achieved that. And I think this season he said, OK, we lost too many games 1-0. So how do we do that? Is it just defence, or do we have to be a bit more balanced with defence and attack? Do we have to find different ways to break down these teams that can just put men behind the ball? And do we have to be a bit more sus? And I think he's worked something out. You know, there is a bit more balance, and I think it's probably in that kind of midfield area, the defensive midfield, working with the back line is kind of sorting itself out. So we're a bit more difficult to break down, as shown by the fewer goals. But it's not obvious how we score more goals, apart from the fact we've got Tony in, who's just been scoring for fun. So I'm not quite sure what he's done. I'd like to find out what other people think. What has he done that has made those 1-0 losses? How have we suddenly learnt to break down these teams? Because it's not obvious to me.
I'm not the expert. I can't answer that. You know, you need somebody more qualified like the Allard to be on this pod to break it down. Perhaps that's a special, you can do a special Allard one with that on. I think what Frank has done is he's actually just reinforced the messages, and I also think that he has brought Tony in, and Tony has put in some really good defensive with a small D shifts as well. I think he's much more. I think he's much more of a player who is prepared to run back and help out the midfield. Even at times, you see him in defence. You think, what are you doing back there? Actually, as opposed to somebody like Ollie or Saeed, who were out and out real front men, goal scorers. I think he's. I think what Thomas Frank has done is he said, when we need to defend, we need to defend as a team. All 11 of you have something to contribute when we need to grind out the result, when we need to battle. And I think that's what they're doing.
I think you made a brilliant call there, Nick, because I think Tony's defending, especially from dead balls, is superb. I mean, he's often our best defender. You know, he's got the height, but he's superb. And you really notice the difference between him and Ollie, who... You know, he probably wasn't coming back into the box to defend. And I think you're right. I think we have. You know, it's probably good to get JB on this as well. But to look at the stats and look at how many goals we've let in from dead balls, because it must be reduced. Because, we just look much more solid now and much less scared of dead balls than we used to be.
That's right. I think, in general, our all-round defending is better. So in the team, again, one of these things that Thomas Frank is trying to be working on. So everybody, you talk about Ollie Watkins, everybody, our all-round defending is better. And I think then, again, maybe we'll get Will, the spreadsheet winky, who'll do a little bit of a Christmas piece for us as well. Maybe what we're doing is that we're, like I said, slightly less risk-takers when it comes to, maybe to the way that we're playing. You know, beforehand, like I said to you, we might be losing the ball in midfield. We do some great stuff, but also we lose the ball in the midfield and we'll be subject to a quick break attack, bang, and then, they'll score. I think Nottingham Forest. That's how they scored against us at Griffin Park, I think it was. That's just the way that they play. But this time, I think what we're doing is that we're keeping it tight, as Mr. Push-Up Brentford would say, and then we are nicking it ourselves if we can do, which is a very, very good thing.
Bill, if you'd asked me this question yesterday afternoon, I would have said that I think Thomas Frank has become much more pragmatic in the way that he sets out a team and sends people on. The problem is that actually, when you look at what he did in the second half last night after Ethan got sent off, where he actually decided to go for the game and put on force, and change to a 4-3-2 system, which, again, that in itself, I think he's prepared to mix up systems in the course of game more than he was in the previous two seasons. And that's got to have some effect on our results. But I actually do think that he's becoming... I know this sounds stupid, but I think he's becoming slightly more adventurous as the manager, because he's now confident that he really has got the basics and the building blocks in place and he can go ahead from that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, to be honest with you as well, I think the reason why he did go for it, because at the end of the day, we had to keep it tight. And there's one of these things as well, actually, they say defending from the front. You can actually kind of try and lob a load of defenders on, you know, and that's not the way to go. I think with Watford, to be fair, they don't have a great defence. The Watford fans are really, really nervous of their defence, and they know that if we continue to hit them, they're on the back foot. And because we kept on pressuring them and we were always on their case, they weren't having it all their own way. So for us, it was a very, very good way that we actually dealt with that game, I thought. Bringing Marcus Force on, he's always going to be a danger. He had one opportunity, if I remember rightly, where he was very, very close to getting the ball. I think they made a very good interception. If not, he would have been right in there. And there we've gone. We'd have nicked a goal and won that one 2-1. But for me, like I said to you, defending from the front is very important, and I think Thomas got it right in that game. And Watford, you know, listen, their manager was really not happy. They were absolutely quaking in their boots because they knew that there's any moment in time we could have actually nicked a goal, because we are that dangerous.
Can I just say that I think going 4-3-2 just makes perfect sense, because, you know, basically we've taken one of our forwards off, one of our front three. So all we've done is not change the shape of the team. And I always get more worried when we change the shape of the team. You know, if we put four in midfield or five at the back. That's more worrying for me than actually sticking to our guns and just taking somebody off the top because we're down a player. That, you know, just makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense. And what makes even more sense is the fact that we're going to go into the game on Saturday with big smiles on our faces. I mean, I don't know why that makes sense, but I just thought I'd throw it into the pot. We're playing Reading on Saturday, and Reading are coming down, and Reading, what I can gather, on a little bit of a struggle. They've done very well this season. A lot of people gave them a lot of grief all over the place, you know, trying to throw these XG words in there, trying to throw statistics in there, saying they're not creating enough chances to be at the top of the table as they were. But they've defied the odds and they've remained up there. They're still in the top six. They're ahead of us in the table. As we record now, they haven't actually played their game, so they could be quite a few points ahead of us today. But on Saturday, they've got a few injuries as well. And we need to find out a little bit more about Reading and what's been going on this season with another Serbian manager who has been leading them to the top of the table. We're going to talk to Becca from the Tireless End podcast. She's going to be giving us the lowdown on what's going down in Reading. So Christmas is coming thick and fast. We've got one final league game. We got Reading coming down to Griffin Park. Unfortunately, there's going to be no fans in the stadium because we have gone up into Tier 3, as you know. So there's a lot of unhappiness in Bradford, and we thought we'd be able to get behind the players and give them a good old shout before Christmas time, but no. So it's going to be even Stevens as Reading come down there and they try and do the business. And Reading actually have had a great start to the season. 10 wins, 5 losses. That's before Wednesday's night's game, because this is recorded before the game on Wednesday night, but they're firmly in the playoffs. They're even in the top spot a few months ago. But yeah, we're going to go to somebody who knows everything about Reading. We've got Becca from the Tilehurst End podcast. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, actually. I'm all right. We had a good win on Saturday, and then a decent game we played last night, so I'm feeling actually quite confident. So, like, you know, but you must be very happy about your season.
Yeah, it's very unexpected. Certainly after the last kind of few seasons where we've almost just scraped staying up. And I think there was obviously a lot of excitement when the new manager came in. Excitement in terms of no one really knew who he was, but it just that new kind of lease of life into the club, I guess. And it started well. All those wins at the start of the season, and I think it has continued, and we're much higher than I think most of us would have ever expected us to be.
Yeah, I mean, and you're, I mean, not being funny, but I mean, you've got 10 wins under your belt this season. You're pretty much a sort of win or lose team. You've drawn 3 games, which is the least game out of the top seven at the moment. Now Brentford have drawn 8, which is very different from last season when we were losing a lot of games, but we seem to be picking up draws instead of losses. But you seem to be either winning or losing. I mean, is that kind of how you sum up your side, you reckon?
I think I read something on Twitter earlier in the week that described us as consistently inconsistent. we are still kind of seeing two very different sides to Reading. In we're seeing some really great football, but there's still some very basic mistakes being made. But thankfully, there seems to be a bit of fight in the team this season. There seems to be a lot more togetherness, and they seem to want to play for each other and play for the manager. So I think that's where in previous seasons we would have lost a lot of the games kind of 1-2-0. This is where we're kind of grinding out results. So like I said, we are playing some good football, but when the football isn't as good, we're still some or majority of the time still picking up points, which is obviously really good.
And you mentioned your manager as well. I mean, Vyko Paunovic, he's a Macedonian, and he seems to have hit the ground running, really. I mean, he was at Chicago Fire in the MLS, and a lot of people poo-pooed it when they heard it, like, MLS, what's that all about? And he didn't do particularly well there, but I mean, I know somebody who knows him very well, and he said, look, I made a few mistakes at the MLS, but to be fair, I'm going to come over, I've learned from those mistakes, and I'm going to put them to good at Reading. And he seems to have done that, hasn't he?
Yeah, I really like him. I think, like I said before, he's kind of, it's a like fresh air into the club. He knows what to say. Like from a fan point of view, like I enjoy listening to him speak. He's very engaging, and it's showing on the pitch that the team isn't actually that much different to what it was last season. We haven't had an influx of players or anything, but he just seems to be getting it to click, and it's exciting.
And what is it? I mean, again, it's interesting to know, because you can see, you know, players, you know, managers come, managers go, you know, certain managers can take the same better players and just do different things with them. You know, you've got almost like two breeds of managers coming in and out of football at the moment now, and even the EFL. You've got the old school set of managers who are coming in and out. You know, a big Sam's coming in again at West Brom, which made a lot of people laugh, because it's kind of like, you know, that old conveyor belt, you know, who can we do? Let's get Warnock in, let's get Big Sam in, you know. And then you get these other managers who people have got no idea about who they are, and people like Paunovic as well, and obviously there's something about them, and they're also learning their trade with teams who are, you know, not as necessarily as high profile as some of these so-called inverted commas bigger teams. What do you think he is bringing to the table for Reading?
I think there was a kind of a bit of apprehension. I mean, we've had a couple of like unknowns recently. Sam was obviously known as a player but didn't have not much managerial experience, and then the same with Jose Gomez. We didn't really know anything about him, so I think when Paunovic did come in, like I said, it was like exciting and something new, but no one obviously really knew what to expect from him. And I think it's a completely like different. It's not a different style in terms of we still pass it around a lot around the back and stuff, but there just seems to be more ideas creatively. And like you say, he just seems to be getting the best out of the players that other managers may not necessarily have done. But yeah, it's definitely a lot more creative. There's a lot more ideas on the pitch, and it is just a lot better to watch.
So, I mean, you're talking about ideas and players on the pitch and actually doing the business, basically. Who's been on fire for you this season?
Obviously, Lucas Joao. We signed him last season, but he was injured for a lot of it and never really got a running in the team. And I think it was similar when he was at Sheffield Wednesday. He never really got a good run, but just the start of this season, he's just been incredible. And with the link-up with Yaku Mate, and then Ovie Ejaria and Michael Olise in the midfield, it's just been, on their day, when the four of them are like on top form, they're just unplayable. And that kind of like link is something that we've been missing at Reading for a long time. So when we then found that Joao and Mate are now injured for the rest of this year, that's quite a big blow, really. So, yeah.
And you say, I mean, these guys, you know, they're injured, so they're not going to be playing. Well, I mean, you've got a big match tonight against Norwich, I think it is. So it's a huge game for that. And then obviously you've got the Brentford game a few days later as well. Do you think, I mean, they're missing from your side, but obviously you've got other players as well. You know, you've got Ejaria, you've got other players who are very good, very creative players out there. But are you saying that your squad is small, and as soon as you miss two or three players, it's going to make a big impact on how your side plays?
We certainly don't have the smallest squad. I think we've just been hit with injuries quite early on. we've had kind of an injury list from the beginning of the season. So when you then like start adding up these kind of first team names, it then starts to think, oh, okay, like where is the depth in our squad gone? But yeah, like you said, there is a lot of creativity, and João Mate didn't play on Saturday and we still managed to grind out that win. So it's not the end of the world, but obviously I'd prefer to see them play.
Talk about seeing them play. You actually saw some players play in the flesh. You, like me, you know, I went to the stadium a couple of weeks ago and I saw us play Blackburn, and it was fantastic to be in the stadium, to have a bit of a sing song, to have a go at the referee, the lines person, you know, all the stuff that you love to do. And I really enjoyed that as well. But you also were there for the Forest game as well. How was that?
Oh, it was amazing. It was being away from football for so long. It's something me and my mum have done together for like 15, 16 years. So to then go nearly, I think we worked out that it was 287 days or something since we'd been to the football together, and over 300 since we'd been to the Medeski. So to go that long and not, like, it's our hobby. It's like, that's what we look forward to on a weekend. Like, you go through the whole week thinking, oh, I'm going to the football. And like, for me, it's more than just the football. Like I said, I get to spend time with my mum, and to be back in the stadium and to be back with the fans. And it wasn't actually quite an emotional day. Like, when the players came out, they came across to where all the fans were sat, clapped us. Paunovic came over and clapped us, and it was just an amazing feeling to be back there.
That's good. And also, do you think that, I mean, you play Forest and you pretty much play them off the park, actually. I know Forest haven't been particularly great this season, but do you think having fans in the stadium made a difference to the way the players played?
I think from like what they've said on social media, I think the players appreciate that fans can be back. It just, like you said, we played so positively that game, and like, it never looked like we really got out of second gear. Like, it felt like we could have given so much more, but the occasion was just fantastic, and yeah, we just never looked like we were going to lose that game.
So listen, there's a big game on Saturday, there's no doubt about it. You know, you're fighting for a playoff place, an automatic promotion place. We're flying for playoffs, an automatic promotion. So, you know, we both want the 3 points. I mean, looking at your team, I mean, I know a lot of people laughed at you at the beginning of the season because you're at the top of the league, and a lot of people are saying, oh, your XG is low, so, you know, you can't actually maintain that lead if you don't create loads of chances, and, you know, the typical stat stuff that came out. But literally every ball that cut and went in, you know, Jao and all your boys, they were just scoring it every single time, and people said you wouldn't keep it up, but you're still there in December, and you've almost like seemed to have kind of like sort of not only ridden it out, but you've kind of also started to create more chances. You've become defensively solid. Okay, yeah, you let in a few goals in a few games in that mid period, but you seem to find a little balance. But you know, you're good at creating chances, you've got skillful players up there, you finish your chances, you know, good at set pieces, you're good at defending set. I mean, there's a lot of things that your side's good at. So you're playing Brentford, how do you think you're going to get us?
I kind of hope that they just continue what they've been doing. Well, when they've been playing well, it works. Like, we wouldn't be beating teams if it didn't work. So yeah, I think just push. Like, we have been good on like the counter attack, so kind of like just keep it tight early and don't concede early, because that's where our downfall's been. Is if we've conceded first, that's where it's kind of we haven't always managed to get back into the game. So I think as long as we can defend well early on, I think potentially it could go how it did on Saturday, and we just persevered and get the goal at the end.
And, I mean, on the flip side of it, what do Reading have to be? I mean, you know, obviously, about Brentford, because, you know, I mean, people are laughing, calling us Sky Sports Brentford. It's not Sky Sports Leeds, because they've gone now, but putting us all over the TV. We're very confused. So I think they must have got it all wrong. But listen, in pandemic times, you know, I think we'll take that, because obviously it's the easiest way to watch our team. But what do Reading have to do to kind of stem the Brentford tide, do you think?
I don't know about Sky Sports Brentford, because I think Reading are quite close behind with the amount of games that we've been on as well. But I think Ivan Toney is obviously the one to watch. He's banging in a few goals for you. So just like I said, we've got Michael Morrison and Liam Moore as those solid back two. So hopefully we can keep you quiet.
Fingers crossed. So listen, Becca, game on Saturday, exciting, no fans in the stadium, but still it's going to be a great match. Give us a score prediction.
I think 1-0 Reading. Like I said, I think we'll nick it right at the end.
Oh, there you go. They're going to be carrying it on. So listen, Becca, brilliant chatting to you. I haven't chatted to you for a while, as you said, because you know you've been doing your thing, I've been doing our thing, but it's really good chatting to you again, and fingers crossed you get your score prediction completely wrong, so I'll be smiling at the end and you won't do, but we'll chat after the game anyway. Okay,
thank you.
So there you go, Becca from the Tilehurst End podcast, giving us the lowdown on Reading, who are doing very well this season with their new manager. I said to you, new Serbian manager. It's all about the Serbians. They're all infiltrating all over the place now in the, well, in English football. And they're doing the business. So let's see if he's going to be able to carry on. He was actually in the MLS last season. He looked after, is it Chicago? I think he was at the Chicago team. He didn't do particularly well. But what he says, because I have got a few, as you know, I've got some little contacts all over the place. I've got some MLS contacts. And they said that he actually felt that he made a few mistakes last season, but he knew what those mistakes were, and he's not going to make the same mistakes again. He's going to use them to better himself in the championship. So he seems to be doing all right. Reading, we're playing them on Saturday. Listen, look, you know, people really did slag them off, you know, at the beginning of the season. They gave them no chance. They were right up the top there, and like I said to you, they were looking at the chances that they were creating, saying, listen, you can't create sort of one chance a game and score that one chance and win 1-0 or whatever they're doing and continue to do that for the rest of the season. But they're, listen, we're near Christmas time and they're still in the top six. They possibly could be third place by the weekend. Reading are doing okay. We do have a bit of a plus point, though. You know, they might have a few players. Well, they've got a few players out. Is it Mighty Jow and Richards are all injured? So that's going to be a massive blow for us. So Saturday, looking at the way that we've seemed to have turned a bit of a corner, and the fact that Reading seem to be, listen, they used to be struggling. What do you reckon?
I hate playing Reading. I don't know why. They're a team that we always seem to grind out result and get something from, but it's never that glamorous and exciting a game. I mean, Reading, they have been badly hit by injuries, haven't they? And I think Becker said, you know, they'll be fearful of where the goals are coming from on Saturday, which is good because they're up against a very strong defence, as we've discussed previously. So Reading, I just don't think they've got the squad, it looks to me, to hang in there. If they're missing they're reliant on three or four players, and if you're reliant on those and three of those go missing, you have a problem. And I don't see them being a team. They might scrape into the playoffs, but they're certainly not going to be autos. I don't think they'll get into the playoffs either. They've got no real rhythm. They had a good start to the season, but teams could often do that. You know, we're now at the stage where actually the teams that aren't able to sustain a good run of form are going to be found out now. So it's important for Reading to win on Saturday, and I just don't see them doing that.
Just want to say, you know, I mean, I hear what you're saying about saying, you know, they're not going to get playoffs, or they'll just drop out of it. But to be fair, what Reading are good at, they're good at creating chances through individual skill. They've got some really skillful players like Ajaria, Elise as well. They create a lot of long shots, you know, so they create, you know, they score goals from outside the area as well, and they're good at doing it. They create chances using through balls as well, you know, they finish their scoring chances. They're good at attacking set pieces, they're good at defending set pieces, they're good at stealing the ball from the opposition. They're very good at a lot of things. So I think the side's quite good at a lot of those things. You can't necessarily write them off. To be fair, you know, where they are weak is protecting the lead, also avoiding individual errors as well. They make a lot of individual mistakes, and maybe that's where we can actually hit them, especially with Vianelt is doing what he's doing in the midfield as well, and doing his terrier type thing and mopping up as well, and also defending against attacks down the wings, which is obviously where we have our skills as well, big time. Like, you know, that's where we actually, and a lot of teams, they'd be trying to do that by cutting us off at the wings. So, you know, if this is a positive area for us, and where they're very, very weak is defending against long shots. So fingers crossed, you know, we'll be taking out those 35 yarders and smashing them into the back of the net. But to me, I mean, Sav, this isn't the side that we could take for granted, is it?
No, no, I mean, we never can. I mean, as you say, they've got some good players, and you know, people like John Swift have put in some great performances against us in the past. I think tonight's game that they've got against Norwich is going to be a bit of a bellwether, because Norwich are a team which are a lot like us. I think in terms of quality, they're very similar to us. And I think it'll be interesting to see how Reading can cope, because, you know, I'm not sure when they're getting their good results, who they're getting them against. You know, they're not, you know, they obviously haven't played Norwich yet, so it would be interesting to see how they do against them. And I think they're there for the taking. It's quite interesting what you say, their weaknesses are exactly what our strengths are, you know, getting down the wings and stuff. So it bodes well for us. But also, I think we're going to be very buoyed up as well by our recent performances. And there's no reason why we should fear a side that is, you know, as you say, lacking, you know, quite a few of their top performers. So, yeah, it's looking good for us, I think.
In their latest game, Reading beat QPR 1-0. Before that, they lost to Birmingham. And then before that, they beat Forest 2-0. So, I mean, you know, they've played some easy teams, Reading, so far. They haven't really, and as Sav says, Reading only got a 1-1 draw against Sheffield Wednesday. As Sav says, they haven't actually come up against a top-notch team like they've got Norwich tonight, they've got us on Saturday. I would be surprised if Reading were to walk away with anything more than nil point from those two games.
Oh, the Liberal has spoken. Gee, he's just gone there and he's put the axe right in on Reading straight away. You're a little bit confident on this one, the Liberal. I'm not too sure. I mean, listen, while we're there, we might as well. I mean, you know, you've just scythed them. Obviously, big zero for their goal on this one. I mean, I think we might as well go around and do the score predictions. I'm going to start with Savvy B, because, well, I might even have to start with the Liberal, because you're on a roll. What are you saying, the Liberal?
I'm going to say it's going to be a 2-0 victory to the Bees, just to Silver to score one of the goals with a 35-yard screamer.
OK, Savvy B.
Well, I'd like to know what Liberal thinks the score tonight's going to be.
I think Norwich are going to win. I think Norwich will win 2-1.
OK, well, my prediction, I'm not going to predict the Norwich game, but my prediction is 3-1 Bees. I think it's one of those where we'll go 3-0 and then we'll just turn off and they'll score some lucky screamer from somewhere, and it'll be 3-1 and Raya will be really good.
And I think we're going to keep it tight Brentford, and I think it's just a 1-0 win, just to keep us into Christmas, to keep us happy, to keep us ticking over, to keep us thinking about the game which is coming a few days later against Newcastle in the quarter final of the League Cup. And also, this other thing we have to remember as well, actually, no, we're in the League Cup quarter final as our Stoke City, Reading aren't as well, so we're going to have our eye on the ball on that one, and you know, and who we're going to play for that game, you know, who's going to be in, who's going to be out, you know, do we play a B team for a League Cup quarter final, which I find completely ridiculous. I'm even sort of uttered from my mouth saying that. But anyway, we'll be talking about that after the Reading game, because we're going to be doing another podcast specifically for the Newcastle game after the weekend. But anyway, listen, great chat to you guys. This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. I want to say thanks everybody for giving us a little Kofi, just giving us a little shout, supporting Besotted for all the things that we want to do. Besotted.com/beer if you want to buy us a beer. Kevin Sawyer, big up to yourself. Thank you very much this week for just giving you a little shout out for that one as well, Kevin, you know, as well. But everybody
Cheers, Kev.
We're good for this one. Like I said to you, we are going to be, well, we're not going to be in the boozer on Saturday because we're not allowed to go to the boozers. We're going to be in our houses just checking out the Bees game, and fingers crossed they'll be hearing us loud and proud. We're not going to be in the stadium either. We're going to be in our houses. We're going to be loud and proud shouting for the boys on Saturday. Fingers crossed they're going to be able to get a result as we can. But listen, if we can get that result, it's our eyes peeled for the Newcastle game, which we should have been in the stadium for, but unfortunately we've gone tier 3, so we can't. But anyway, doesn't really matter. Let's think about Saturday. Let's see if we can get a result. Let's really go for it. And let's give the passion as we say. Come on, you bees. Let's just go to Christmas on the nice one. Come on, you bees.
Away
days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.